Your business, your life. Weekdays from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. on San Diego's ESPN 1700.
This is the Ray Lucia Show.
I'm going to the best for the answers here.
The one show that helps you make better money moves. The program all about your money, your business, and your life.
You guys talk about a lot of really good information that even I can understand.
Call Ray now at 844-RAY-SHOW, 844-RAY-SHOW. This is the Ray Lucia Show.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And welcome to the Ray Lucia program, where we're going to help you save up enough money so that you can buy the Apple X or the Apple 10, whatever you want to call it, for about $1,200. Welcome, folks. It's the Ray program, and I'm here to help you make better money moves, which probably means, you know, that seven you got, it's probably just fine. And besides which, when you look into that beautiful new screen on your Apple X or Apple 10 for facial recognition, the phone's likely, Siri's probably going to go, ah! That's what I'm thinking. Anyway, welcome, folks. Hey, look who's here. Lynn Rowe is, what were you roaming around the hallways?
I'm just lost, and I said, you know, I think I'll go visit Ray.
Well, I'm glad you're here, because I do have some stuff. You mind co-hosting this hour with me? It's good to have you
I'm an Apple owner.
The studio. Did you buy the Apple 10?
No. I went from the 4 to the 7. That's how outdated I was. I mean, I was like, it was time.
Well, I'm still on a 6. I'm fine. I don't want to buy any more gadgets.
Yeah.
You know, my kids, they like the gadget stuff. So I'm sure there'll be an Apple Watch and there'll be, an Apple X or 10. Is it X or 10? I still can't figure that out. You guys say 10, right?
Yeah. I say X.
Google
it. So Curtis says X. Well, it can be either or.
Okay.
But they skip 9.
That's what I can't figure out. It can't be 10. I'm sorry, it can't
no,
be 10.
No, it's Apple. It's the Apple 10 or the Apple X. I think they're going to call it X because it's
have they been using
cooler.
Roman numerals?
The kids don't know Roman
up
numerals.
Up until, well, then it's Apple X.
It's going to be Apple X. Anyway, so I'm Lynn Rowe, Certified Financial Planner. If you want to check in with us, give us a buzz at 724-729-7469. Email's a little bit easier to get a hold of me this hour, raylucia.com, raylucia.com. I do have a lot of stuff on the agenda, like I was talking just a few moments ago about natural disasters and having enough liquidity and emergency funds, and we'll get to that. Also, stress testing your retirement portfolio and what the experts like Ms. Rowe have to say about what you need to do to make sure that you can retire someday in comfort and safety. She's also a specialist in long-term health care, although that's not really on my docket today. But since she's roaming around the hallways, I may have some questions for you. So sit back, folks. Relax. It is the Ray program helping you to make better money moves. So, you know, on another hour of the program, I had a fellow on who was an expert in fire prevention and so forth. And, you know, since natural disasters and any disasters are on our mind right now, I got thinking about not only fire, but these hurricanes and thinking about retailers. And I read a story early this morning that said, you know, the big retailers, they're going to be fine in Houston, Louisiana and Florida. You know, like I said, Nike's probably not going to go out of business anytime soon because they lost some inventory in a store due either to the looting or due to the water damage and so forth. But they also said the smaller shops are pretty much in big trouble. And it brings me to a few things that, you know, since I've been in business, multiple businesses for the past 35, 40 years, and you just don't think about this stuff. You don't think about risk management. Lynn, when you did financial planning exclusively for a living, what was the very, very first thing you were taught to do with a client?
Manage risk.
Talk manage
to them about risk tolerance, build a portfolio that had a solid foundation of safe, investment type products.
And the risk goes beyond just portfolio risk.
Oh, yeah. Insurance needs, yeah.
Liquidity risk. So yeah. take this business owner that's got the, you know, the sneaker shop or whatever. Doesn't matter. It could be the drive-through coffee place that you go to every day or a small franchisee. If that person hasn't, you know, done a proper job of insuring, we used to talk about business overhead insurance.
Right. I'm
prepared to, I don't know if I can get to it today, but I'm prepared to talk about buy and sell insurance. Mm. We used to pull out a yellow piece of paper and say, okay, let us go through every ugly thing you can think of. Well, today you got to say a hurricane could put, you know, 10 feet of water and destroy my inventory, destroy my business. It could take us a year or two before we get permitted, rebuild, have the cash to do the inventory. So if you don't have insurance coverage, not just like water damage and hurricane and earthquake and fire type insurance, but if you don't have a way to supplement your income with some kind of, you know, business interruption insurance, then you may not be prepared for the next natural disaster. So today I want to cover, and I'm glad you're here, Lynn, because you're an expert in risk management, certainly on a personal financial planning standpoint, but I think we can broaden that discussion to just about anything.
Absolutely. You know, Ray, a lot of those folks, poor things, were not in a floodplain, and so they did not have flood insurance. It wasn't even available to some of the homeowners. My question is, did the small business owner have an option for something like that? Probably not.
The small business owner can buy business interruption coverage as well. They should, because you never know what's going to interrupt the business. I was talking about buy and sell agreements. I spent a lot of time in my early years, well, my mid years, not my early years, I was out hustling for a living, but in my mid years, I worked with business owners, typically professionals like physicians and so forth. And by and large, they would buy, you know, stuff like disability coverage because, you know, the American Academy of Fill in the Blanks had special programs, and they went to the conferences and they all said, you got to have this stuff because if you're a surgeon and you get a trigger finger, you could be finished, or something happens, you could be out of work. But many of them didn't have buy sell coverage. So you and I are in business together. I get sick, disabled, or die, and my wife comes to you and says, hey, Lynn, you know that $100,000 a year that you guys have been, you know, each taking as a draw in the business? Can you keep paying me that?
Yeah.
And you say, well, can you do what Ray did? Well, no, I'm raising my kids, our kids, but he's in a wheelchair. And what do you do? You're faced now with the dilemma of, oh, your partner can't show up at work. You've got to hire somebody to do what he did so that you guys can stay in business, so that you can keep paying yourself something.
Right.
You got to pay that person. And now you got the spouse coming to you and saying, you know what? We needed this income to survive. What do you do?
We used to set up a buy-sell agreement through their attorney and fund it with buy-sell insurance, which basically paid, in the event of the death, it paid the partner funds to be able to buy the other person's practice or their share of the business away from the family. Or if they were disabled, there was a disability plan in place that would start to fund an income to do that buyout, or even a lump sum to do that buyout.
Yeah, but you know, but most people don't think about that. You know, because you would go into a meeting. I know, because I've been in those meetings, and you bring it up, and it's like, you know, deer in the headlights or whatever, or headlights in the, well, I don't know what the saying
is. It's not
going
to happen to them.
It's not going to happen to them. So today we focus on risk management. All of the different insurances, whether it's fire, earthquake. You know, I live in an earthquake zone. You do, too.
Yes.
And, you know, every time we feel that rumble, you say to yourself, is this going to be the big one?
Well, you know, there are a lot of folks in the East Coast who have been victims of this flood, who didn't have flood insurance, who are looking at the West Coast and saying, what are you guys talking about? How many of you have earthquake insurance?
Well, that's
true. And I'm thinking, you know, maybe it's time.
Well, my former partner, Eddie Saunders, who passed away probably 7, 8, 9, 10 years ago now, mm-hmm. he was very wealthy. He was a contractor. Mm-hmm. And I've told this story before. But he bought as an investment an apartment building in Northridge, California. And you remember all of the stuff about the apartment building that collapsed on people and people died? That was his building.
Oh, my gosh.
He got sued. It was all up to code and everything. It didn't matter. You know, in a case like that, they're looking for a scapegoat. His was one of the many apartments that went down, and he lost literally everything, which is why he ended up being my real estate partner, because we went out and did some deals, and before he passed, he, excuse me, he did recover. Lynn Rowe in the house. I don't know. She's, I don't know, you just crashing the party today?
I thought it'd be fun to say hi.
All right. Well, we'll say hi after the break. Stick around, folks. It's the Ray Lucia Show.
Green-eyed lady, ocean lady.
Your business, your life. ESPN 1700.
Number 9. Yeah, I think we found the iPhone 9. Welcome back. It is the Ray Lucia program. So we're talking today about stress testing your financial life and your financial plan. And step number one always is manage risk. So pull out a piece of paper right now, folks, and let's kind of go through this, all right? On a cursory basis, what's the ugliest thing that could happen? Death. I mean, if you're a breadwinner, you know, I was the sole breadwinner in the family for many, 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 many years. My wife actually does make a little bit of coinage now, Lynn. And I'm quite appreciative of that.
God bless her.
Yeah, we used to call that GMI, guaranteed monthly income.
Yes.
When the spouse actually, you know, because I grew up in an era where, you know, if you had 4 kids in 4 years like us,
right,
somebody had to stay home and it wasn't going to be me because I wasn't very good at changing diapers.
Yeah, that's not funny.
If you get my drift on that one.
Yeah.
Death, how do you solve that problem? How do you solve that problem, Lynn?
Life insurance.
By life insurance. I could get disabled. How do you solve that problem?
Disability insurance.
If I'm older, I could go into a nursing home.
Long-term care insurance.
I mean, it goes on. So if I own a business and I have a partner, then there's
buy-sell insurance.
And this business interruption. So you make a list of every ugly thing that could happen. And before you go, you know, rolling the dice in the Las Vegas casino or the stock market, which may be one and the same, who knows, you want to make sure that you manage risk. Now, once we get to the retirement portfolio, it's the same thing. You go back and you say, okay, what's the worst that can happen? So if we want to stress test your portfolio, the first thing you have to do is determine your mix between stocks and bonds and real estate and cash and annuities and so forth. And I bring up all the time product diversification. You hear a lot about asset class diversification. Large cap, small cap, domestic, international, growth, value, bonds, high yield. And all that stuff is important. And with a good financial advisor, you can get the mix right. But in my humble opinion, and I believe that actually I know this to be correct, because I've read 25 different research reports, white papers, and so forth. When you have product diversification, the likelihood of success goes up, the likelihood of failure goes down, but more importantly, the likelihood that you'll keep your powder dry, live a longer, happier, and healthier life becomes more evident. And studies have proven that, haven't they?
Absolutely right. Absolutely. We've seen it also in a one-on-one basis when people are doing their planning. If they just build the portfolio around, for example, just a time horizon. Look at your time horizon for when you're going to need an income. And that will help make determinations, like Ray is saying, between different products that you should be in. Some are guaranteed, some aren't. Some have ceilings, which you might not be comfortable with in terms of the return, but some don't. generally they kind of, you know, pivot against each other, and you want to diversify between those products to get that diversification.
And what we're talking about here is making sure that you have certain asset classes that are guaranteed, that aren't going to lose money if interest rates go up. I talked about that a little bit ago. If interest rates go up in your bond portfolio, you're buying long-term government bonds, the safest bond you can buy. A 30-year U.S. government bond. Today you get about 3%, 3.5% if you're lucky. And interest rates go up 1%, and you lose 10, 12, 15% of your principal value. Now, if interest rates come back down, maybe you get that back. But what if interest rates go on a 30-year hiatus to the upside? Because remember, we're on a 30-year hiatus to the downside. And we look at our bond portfolio, and we say, man, bonds, they earned 8-point-something% over that 30-year period that ended long about August or so, I think, of 2011. Bonds produced a better return for that period of time than stocks did. There was like a month there where the 30 years ending some date, bonds did better than stocks. And so now when you go into the computer and it calculates your Monte Carlo and all that stuff, it's using that 30-year period of bonds to come up with some kind of an expected potential return for bonds that, in my humble opinion, ain't going to happen. I mean, when you go from a 13% rate to zero over a 30-year period of time, you could just as easily go from zero to 13% over the next 30-year period of time, which means that bond fund is going to really stink. So product diversification. Why not have a bond that doesn't go down in value? I talked with Pastula just a little bit ago about actuarial bonds. By using actuarial bonds, more commonly known as annuities. But there are so many different types. There's a life-only annuity. There's joint life with rights of survivorship. There's fixed annuities. There's fixed indexed annuities. There's variable annuities. There's annuities, like you said, that have caps on them. Some that don't have caps on them. Some where the interest is based on how well a certain index does. And you need expertise. But does that mean you shouldn't have them? No, you should. That's a product that the experts, I'm talking about the finance professors from all over the world, are suggesting you should have in your portfolio. Likewise, real estate. Real estate, up until recently, was sort of an unsung hero in investing. But now when we look back 5, 10, 15, 20, 25, 30, 35, 40 years, you will find that one of the best performing asset classes of all is real estate. But how do you buy it? Do you buy it in the form of brick and mortar that you can go kick and you own the property directly owned? Do you go into some kind of a limited partnership, or do you put it in a stock REIT? All of these are discussion elements and points that you need to have with an advisor. CDs. You know, they're laddered CDs. There are other things you can do. You can buy, I know you've looked in the secondary market for annuities.
Yes.
People that don't, have you ever heard those guys on TV? I want my money and I want it now or whatever. And they're on the bus and they're singing songs. And you go, what in the heck are these guys singing about? Well, they're singing about people that have an annuity that want to cash out their annuity. Maybe they're sick, they have AIDS, they're dying, and they're getting $1,000 a month. But they'd rather have 30, 40, 50,000 instead of 1,000 a month for the next 5 years. So they're willing to take a discount. Well, companies buy those, and you can participate in buying those and get a better potential rate of return. You just take it off of somebody else's hands, and there are intermediaries that do that for you. This is where a really sharp financial advisor can help you. Pull out the yellow pad. Write down all of the ugly stuff, all of the risks. And then next to it, kind of like the Ben Franklin thing where you have that big T on your yellow pad. And next to risk number one, on the other side of the line, write down how you're going to mitigate that risk. And if you do that, I think you are going to live a longer, happier, and healthier life, because you will not be stressed out by risk. in your portfolio and in your life. Stick around. More of the Ray Lucia Show coming up.
Your business, your life. Weekdays from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. on San Diego's ESPN 1700.
I got the Cinnamon Girl sitting next to me. It's Lynn Rowe wearing a cinnamon colored outfit. Is that cinnamon color?
Sort of. Yeah.
What color is cinnamon? It's sort of brownish.
Brownish, reddish.
Yeah, reddish.
Yeah.
You asked me during the break about how well the market's been doing this year.
Mm-hmm.
And it's up about 11%. Not bad. Not bad considering the volatility that we've experienced, especially recently with, you know, the North Korea stuff. Who the heck knows what's going to happen there? But I pulled this just for the fun of it. So the Hang Seng Index over in Hong Kong is up 27.07% this year. The Bombay Stock Exchange in India, 19.74%. We're in third, by the way, at 11.13. Shanghai, 8.79. The CAC 40, that's over in France, 6.47. The DAX in Germany, 5.8. The FTSE over in England, Great Britain. Get out of here with the FTSE stuff. 3.28 in the Nikkei. In Japan, well, the Japanese market has just been horrible for the last 25, 30 years. It's starting to make a bit of a comeback, and some people seem to think it's really on the mend. But that's a case where they've been doing quantitative easing for a long time, and they just cannot create inflation. And it makes me wonder and worry a little bit about where we are and why I am a huge fan of let's do something about this tax code. I don't know what. I've got my own personal opinions, but I don't need to get into that. But we really haven't done anything for 30 plus years on the tax code. And wouldn't it be nice for us to get beyond 2%? Gross domestic product. Wouldn't it be nice to bring back $3 trillion into this country? And then I saw online, I don't know if you've seen this, but the Republicans, Paul Ryan and others, are floating on the internet the little postcard that they want to put the tax return on.
It'll never happen.
I don't think it'll happen either, but it was pretty cool. I was thinking to myself, what are all the freaking accountants going to do, man? This is going to be...
Well, you got to know that the accountants and lots of people in that business are saying, no, we don't want that. And the lobbies are just screaming at them.
The only deduction, I might have it here somewhere. I think I do. The only deduction I saw in there was mortgage interest and charitable contributions. Yeah, here it is.
Okay.
A better way forward on tax reform. You can look it up online. Here's what it said. The top line was wage and compensation income. Then you add half of your investment income. Subtract contributions, like savings plans, 401ks, and so forth.
Mm.
Subtract the standard deduction or subtract mortgage interest and charitable contributions. That's it. And then you get to your taxable income on line 7. Remember, there's 75,000 some odd pages of the U.S. tax code. Preliminary tax on line 8, subtract your child credit, still going to keep that, the earned income credit, they're going to keep that, subtract the higher education, they're going to keep that. So the credits stay in for the lower income individuals. I don't know if there's going to be phase outs or anything like that. Then you get your total tax withheld, and then you either have a refund due or taxes owed. All on, what is that, about a 4x8 postcard.
It would certainly be a breath of fresh air. I mean, let's face it, we have been inundated. I mean, the printer companies alone, I'm sure, would be against that just because they're not going to be able to print and use up all
I've got to file my return in a little bit because I always do an extension as I talk you into doing one this year, too. Yeah. Say thank you.
Thank you.
Maybe. And on a meeting with Mark, our mutual CPA friend, on Friday to do planning. And I dread it because it's boxes and boxes and boxes of stuff. I have a complicated life. And then I've got my kids and I help them with their returns. And their lives are becoming more and more complicated. So this to me...
And man, you complicated mine this year with the planning that you did for me.
I did some planning for Lynn. You want to talk about it?
Whatever. Sure.
Okay, so Lynn comes to me and she says, I'm getting sick and dang tired of paying all this tax.
I'm sure you've never heard that before.
And I said, well, you know, do you have some savings? Yeah, I've got some savings. Do you have some money in your retirement account? Yeah, I got a 401k. And, you know, the list went on and on and on. I said, so why don't you incorporate your business as a C corporation? Oh, C corporations, that's not good. You got to pay tax twice. No, forget it. You can have a fiscal year end. I'm doing this for you, Lynn, just because I know you forget a lot.
It's please.
So Lynn sets up, through her attorney, a fiscal year end C corporation. And so all of the money she earned from, say, April 1 through December 31 goes into the C corporation. But she's going to select a fiscal year of maybe, you know, March 31. I'm making these dates up. So that all of the income that she makes this year gets postponed into next year. Lynn has no employees. Lynn, I have to say, is of the age where she can fund a defined benefit plan based on her prior earnings, which will gobble up likely most of that income. This year will go into a plan next year because she won't have to report that income this year. And by doing so, Lynn's going to create a loss this year in her sole proprietorship, which was up to whatever date she filed the corporation. And in a loss, she can go back to last year's taxes and get a refund. This is all totally legit. Ran it by the CPA, our friend Mark. He sort of liked it.
After he got out his calculator and his yellow pad and an hour of calculating, he said, you know, that's a good idea.
He took my notes.
Oh,
you remember that?
He took
my yellow paper.
Well, yeah.
Anyway, so then, but this is what, when we're talking about planning, this is the kind of stuff that you can do. Now, that's small business owners. That won't work for everybody. In Lynn's particular case, it will work. I'm sure somebody's saying, well, how's she going to eat from April through December? Well, that's why I asked her if she had enough resources in other places. Of course, she could always roll money into her new retirement account and borrow 50 grand out and pay it back over the next 5 years. So there are ways for her to get by. She can do reverse mortgage. She can go to the bank and borrow some money. But Lynn is a prudent investor, and she's got some investments. We actually talked about margining one of your favorite stocks,
yes,
too, didn't we?
Yes, we did.
And after you got up off the floor...
I squirreled that away over the years and watched it grow, and I watched it go way up, and I was one of those young and stupid people that said, I'll wait till it reaches X dollars per share. And of course it never did and went back.
Well, but went down, but it's come back and
it's fine.
And but you have the ability. It's like margin is not a dirty word. In a case like this, if you have a stock worth, let's say it's worth 50 or 75,000 bucks, because you bought it for 10 and it's had a great run, and this is a tech company, a local tech company that's done exceptionally well. Well, if it's worth 75 grand and you need to take 10 or 20,000 bucks, and you can margin that at 2 or 3% interest, why not? I mean, the stock would have to fall 70%. So there are techniques that you can use that may appear to be risky on the surface that aren't. Reverse mortgages appear to be risky on the surface, but what we've learned from the research is, in many instances, they are not risky. Having that line of credit may be exactly what the doctor ordered as far as having a tool to help you do things like postpone taking Social Security and building your own annuity with your Social Security money. And the strategies that you talk to your financial advisor about can be invaluable. Because Lynn, I think in your case, You were a pretty happy camper after that meeting.
Yeah, it took me a long time to kind of figure out, okay, I'm doing this again, and I'm doing that, and I'm doing...
It's a little bit, and I told you, the first first 2 years, actually.
Yeah.
You might have to call the lawyer or the CPA and say, now, what are we doing, and
mostly
how are we doing this?
I call you.
Or you just call me. Or wander around the halls like you did today, and I'll invite you on the show, and we'll, what else about your personal life can we tell the nation?
Lay it all out there, Ray.
Lynn Rowe, certified financial planner. Thanks for stopping by. That was very fun.
Yeah.
And then I'll probably see you after the show then, if you're going to
be
sticking
fun.
Around.
Okay.
Lynn Rowe, CFP, IWantMyLTC.net. If you want to visit with one of the best CFPs that can help you do a lot of this planning stuff, IWantMyLTC.net. All right, a quick break. Come back with your emails and the business spotlight, I believe. Stick around. This is the Ray Lucia Program. No one came at all, 'cause they were too busy watching.
Listen anywhere,
anytime,
to San Diego's ESPN 1700. We're streaming live at ESPN1700.com.
Or download the free ESPN 1700 app from Google Play or iTunes.
Hey, welcome back, folks. It is the Ray Lucia Show. Bam, bam. And welcome back. Again, a special thanks to Lynn Rose hanging out in the hallways today. And I invited her in to co-host with me. She did a fine job. We've got a bunch of emails that have come in, so hit it, fellas. Let's get to them. We start with Frank. I'm buying a large life insurance policy. Should my trust own it and or be the beneficiary? Well, here's the deal. If you name the trust as the beneficiary, then when you die, that money's going to the trust. So if you have, you know, kids you want that money to go to specially, and they're not beneficiaries of the trust, then you probably aren't doing the right thing. But if you've really done a good job of estate planning and you've articulated in your revocable living trust exactly how you want all the money to be distributed, then typically, yes, I would have my life insurance policy go to the trust. Now, there are exceptions to all of the rules, and this is why you need to not talk to me about it. I'm not a lawyer. Go to an estate planner, an estate planning attorney, and talk about this. But many times, there are kids from a prior marriage, and you want to be able to give them something outright so that they don't have to fight over money with the spouse who's the trustee of the trust. Perhaps the surviving spouse, usually is the surviving spouse. And so if I'm in a second marriage and I've got four kids from the first marriage, and I name the trust as the beneficiary of my life insurance policy, and I name my wife, second wife now, as the trustee of that trust, now my four kids got to go to the trustee to get cash that I promised them in the trust. But the trustee isn't really, I mean, you have to go to court and sue. And that costs a lot of money. And guess who's going to pay for it? The trust. So there would be reasons to name a direct beneficiary. But most of the time, especially in long-term marriages, you would name the trust and let the trust do all the heavy lifting. G-L-O-R-I-A, Gloria. Ray, love the show. I'm 76 and on a fixed income. My company that provides my pension has offered me the chance to take a large lump sum instead, and instead of getting $653 a month, I'm in good health and live off of the pension and Social Security, but money is tight. Should I take the lump sum or stick with the monthly checks? Gloria, I don't know how big the lump sum is, but if it ain't somewhere near 100 grand or more, stick with the pension. Money is tight. What if you get the money and blow it and they give you $75,000, which actuarially it's probably what it's worth, 75 grand, right? So they give you 75 grand and the money's supposed to run out when you're 88. And what happens when you're 89, 90, 91? What a, you said you're in good health. I think it would be a huge mistake. At the very most, I'd do a, you know, what we call a mens a mensa plan. You know, half and half, or take some money out. Like if you've got some debt that's, you know, 13%, it's eating you for lunch, and you can promise me that if you take that money out in a lump sum, you pay off the debt, then maybe. But usually, no. Because here's what happens. If you take the money in a lump sum, you got to roll it to an IRA. If you take money out of the, you don't have to, but if you don't roll it to an IRA, you're going to get tagged with a big tax bill. And then when the money comes out of the IRA, you're going to pay tax on it anyway. So the more I think about it, the more, Gloria, just leave it be. Keep the pension income flowing. Martha, I have about $150K of student loan debt. Whoa! At 3.5%, which I pay monthly. I max out my 401K and 529 contributions. I still have surplus cash flow. Should I reduce the debt monthly or invest the extra? Well, Martha, it depends on how old your kids are and how close you are to having to fund their college. You know, there's different ways to pay off, to pay for college. You're learning. You must be a doctor or something. $150K of student loans? Wow. I'd want to get that paid off, especially if they're 6 and 7 and 8% loans. But you said they're 3.5. So now it's probably not income tax deductible because you probably make too much money to deduct that interest. So if you want a safe investment, I think I'd pay that debt off because I'm sure it's going to choke you eventually cash flow wise. But don't sacrifice the retirement account. That's a pre-tax contribution. Well worth you maxing out. I'm glad you're doing that. But let's get rid of this stupid debt. You can always invest money later. I got to assume that Martha's fairly young, have 150 grand in student debt. Like I said, she's got to be a professional of some sort, probably making a bunch of money. Ted, I want to refinance my home loan to use these lower interest rates. Do you have a strategy? Should I keep the payment the same, pay off sooner, cash out and invest, or some combination? Well, I really hesitate to have you do a cash out, refi and invest, because if you lose the money, you still got to pay the debt off. So that to me is a bit of a risky proposition. Now, refinancing to get a lower rate, yes, obviously I would do that. If I'm going to invest in something that I'm darn sure I'm not going to lose, for example, let's say I could buy some real estate with a healthy down payment. And I've done all my homework, I've done all my research, I've got my property manager all set up, and I've looked at the worst case scenario, which is I went back to the last three recessions, looked at how far rents had to come down to keep the place occupied. And I decided that I could survive through that. And that's kind of the exercise I'd go through. Then maybe I'd invest in something that's not super volatile like the stock market. So possibly real estate. Stocks, you know what? You have to have tremendous discipline to be a stock market investor. You need to have tremendous staying power to be a stock market investor. And if the market drops 50 some odd percent like it did a few years back, and you sell out at an inopportune time and create a guaranteed loss, you're going to be kicking yourself from here to Timbuktu that you borrowed money that you got to pay back over the next 20 or 30 years just to finance a bum investment. You can take that one from me. I've done it. On another show, I'll tell you which bum investment it was. But a loan to a friend comes to mind. 844-RAY-SHOW, emails at raylucia.com. Now go out and make it a fantastic day. God bless, and bye-bye.
You're listening to The Ray Lucia Show, bringing you the best in money information, answering questions about your biggest financial challenges, talking about your money, your business, and your life. Ray Lucia is not a registered representative of or affiliated with any securities brokerage or investment advisory firm. The views and opinions expressed by Ray and his guests are not necessarily those of the station or its sponsors and should not be construed as legal, tax, or investment advice. You should always consult with the appropriate advisors before making any financial decisions. Ray is available to take your questions online at raylucia.com.